This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
There has always been problems with our judiciary for many, many years. But what we have seen in the past few weeks is really unprecedented. It certainly seems, from the human rights atrocities point of view, they have been more widespread, the extremeness of the atrocities, than anything we've seen in a decade.
That's Zimbabwe lawyer Doug Coltart explaining why lawyers are protesting over the problems of the country's legal system. Details coming up also. The United Nations Refugee Agency says about 30,000 people in northeastern Nigeria have fled to Cameroon. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Zimbabwe lawyers took to the streets today to hand over a petition calling for the return to the rule of law in the country's judicial system. Reporter Kudzai Zanawashi has details.
Am faithful and dear to allegiance to and observe all the laws.
Hundreds of Zimbabwean lawyers recite their oath of office after marching to the Constitutional Court to hand over their petition. Beatrice Mtetwa is a human rights lawyer who handed over the petition.
The petition is asking for the restoration of the rule of law in the country, for respect of our constitution, in particular respect of all rights associated with trials. And this is with specific reference with the current prosecutions which are being fast-tracked without pre-trial procedures being followed.
The march comes after the arrest of more than 500 people in connection with the stay-away protests in the past few weeks. Some protesters blocked roads, burned tires and cars and looted stores during the protests over the collapsing economy and the recent sharp increase in fuel prices. Mtetwa says security and law enforcement officials have committed numerous legal violations during the crackdown on protesters and government critics.
Lawyers being denied access to clients, with some injured persons being denied medical attention, and generally trials that are being conducted outside what would be regarded as fair and impartial justice.
Lawyer Fadzai Mahere is among the marchers.
Challenging the military's role in civilian life because the constitution doesn't provide for it. We're also marching in support of fair trial rights and for the magistrates' court to respect people's constitutional rights to bail, to adequate facilities, to prepare their defense, and to legal representation. So it's all about the rule of law.
Doug Coltart, another lawyer, says Zimbabwe's judicial system has not been perfect, but the past 2 weeks have been record-breaking.
There has always been problems with our judiciary for many, many years. But what we have seen in the past few weeks is really unprecedented. It certainly seems, from the human rights atrocities point of view, they have been more widespread, the extremeness of the atrocities, than anything we've seen in a decade.
There are numerous reports of security forces beating protesters, raiding homes late at night to drag men out of their homes to attack them, and raping women. Coltart says anyone connected to the protests is denied bail in the courts. This is the first time in Zimbabwe's modern history lawyers have taken to the streets to register their anger over how cases are being handled. The government has said that men disguised as security forces committed many of the abuses against civilians. President Emmerson Mnangagwa says the government will investigate alleged abuses. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zanawashi from Harare.
Nigerian lawyers are boycotting court today and tomorrow in protest of the suspension of Chief Justice Walter Onogun. Lawyers, members of the opposition and many senators say President Muhammadu Buhari's decision to suspend the justice is unconstitutional and is an attempt to interfere in the February 16th election. The matter has led to protests around the country over the past few days. The Nigerian Senate late yesterday asked the country's Supreme Court to review the constitutionality of Onogun's suspension. Buhari suspended Onogun Friday, saying he acted on the recommendation of the National Anti-Corruption Body, the Code of Conduct Tribunal, which has charged him with violating laws that require public officials to declare all assets. Yusuf Olanion is the spokesperson for the Senate president. He told VOA's James Butty that under the Constitution, the Code of Conduct Tribunal has no authority to suspend a Chief Justice.
The CCT cannot recommend the suspension of the Chief Justice of Nigeria, particularly when the CCT is a tribunal that is supervised by the presidency.
There also have been demonstrations supporting Onogun's removal from office. Nigerian Information Minister Lai Mohammed spoke with VOA's Peter Kloti yesterday and rejected complaints that the suspension was a political move.
No connection at all. We are talking about the highest judicial officer in the country who is being accused of violating the provisions of the Code of Conduct for public officers and who admitted he has done so.
Court proceedings in Onogun's corruption case have been adjourned until an appeal of the matter is heard. The appeal process begins tomorrow. President Buhari's top rival in the election, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, called Onogun's suspension unconstitutional. The United Nations Refugee Agency says about 30,000 people in northeastern Nigeria have fled to Cameroon. UN High Commissioner for Refugees spokesman Babar Bolok says the mass movement followed the withdrawal of Cameroonians' forces from the area. He called the situation worrying and alarming. The security forces had moved into the area after a January 14th attack on the city of Ran by the terror group Boko Haram. 14 people were killed after the attack. 9,000 people fled to Cameroon but were refused asylum. Boko Haram has promised to return to the city of 80,000 people. Bolok said Cameroon is part of the multinational joint task force that secured the area. The spokesman said violence in northeastern Nigeria has driven tens of thousands of civilians to refugee camps or towns in Borno State. The UN Children's Fund is launching its largest ever appeal for $3.9 billion in life-saving assistance for 73 million people, including 41 million children affected by conflict, natural disasters, and other emergencies in 59 countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva at the launch of the UNICEF's 2019 Global Appeal.
This year marks the 30th anniversary of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. The UN Children's Fund says 2019 also marks a year of heightened conflict, with more countries at war than at any time in the past three decades. Among the greatest victims are more than 34 million children affected by conflict or disaster. UNICEF says they are suffering horrific levels of violence, deprivation, and trauma with little access to protection and life-saving assistance. UNICEF Director of Emergency Operations Manuel Fontaine says 88% of this year's appeal is for humanitarian crises driven by conflict. He says the single biggest operation is to help Syrian refugees, the largest displacement crisis in the world, and the host communities in five neighboring countries of asylum.
The second largest appeal is for Yemen, which over the past year has seen conditions, unfortunately, that were already catastrophic for children, get even worse, if that's possible. 8 out of 10 children, which is over 11 million, now require humanitarian assistance in Yemen.
UNICEF's biggest operations traditionally have been in Africa. But this year, the Democratic Republic of Congo places third, followed by Syria and South Sudan. Fontaine says Africa, unfortunately, is the continent with the biggest gap in funding. He tells VOA African countries are not getting the attention they need, and that has serious consequences for humanitarian operations.
In a country like Cameroon, which is one of the countries for which we have concerns, particularly in the northwest and southwest region at the moment, we had aimed to immunize 61,000 children against measles, and because of lack of resources, we could only immunize a bit more than 2,000. So obviously, we're far behind where we needed to do.
Fontaine says UNICEF has had to drastically cut back services for gender-based violence in Central African Republic because it only has received 36% of the money it needs. In all cases, he says, funding shortfalls have very direct implications on the lives of children and women. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
16 past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Cameroonian officials have arrested opposition leader Maurice Kamto, according to his lawyer. The arrest took place after police fired warning shots to break up a crowd of protesters during the weekend. Agence France-Presse reports that 117 people were arrested during protests, marches in several towns on Saturday. Kamto has been building dissent against President Paul Biya since he lost the presidential election in October. Kamto officially received about 14% of the vote at the time. The opposition said the balloting was marked by cheating, and Kamto declared himself the winner. Kamto also has challenged Biya's victory in the African Union court. Cameroon's government has pressured Kamto's movement for the rebirth of Cameroon party and has called the opposition leader an outlaw for not accepting the election results. AFP reports in France, protesters broke into Cameroon's embassy in Paris on Sunday, destroying pictures of Biya. Biya is one of Africa's longest-serving leaders, has led Cameroon since 1982 with the support of the army and his Cameroon People's Democratic Movement. Nairobi is among Africa's most congested cities. But in the latest move to address gridlock, Kenyan officials say they will ban private cars from entering the city center on Wednesdays and Saturdays. City travelers will be required to use public transport, including trains and buses. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
Senior Transport Ministry officials say the move to designate car-free days is to decongest the city and allow the government to roll out a bus rapid transport system. James Macharia is Kenya's Transport Cabinet Secretary.
Even our environment will be physically very different. And this is the way Europe, those advanced countries, manage the environment. And also avoiding congestion in key areas of the city. So you'll be seeing they're doing the rollout from 1st of February and thereafter. We scale up to see how it goes.
With private cars off the road, plans call for a bus rapid transport or BRT system to enable commuters access to decent transport services to and from the city center. Officials in East Africa's largest economy says the 64 high-capacity buses are being brought in from South Africa for the pilot program.
What is critically important is that we must bring BRT buses, buses which are compliant to BRT specifications. This team you find here from the private sector, they've been given those specifications so that if they find them locally, they buy them locally. If not, they have to get them wherever they are.
Public service commuter minibuses, popularly known as matatus, will drop off and pick up passengers at designated bus stops. People are advised to leave their private vehicles at home and use public transport during the 2 days. The city also plans to introduce a light railway line. The car-free initiative will also help reduce pollution in the rapidly urbanizing city. But the announcement has sparked off a public debate.
My name is George Soita. I'm feeling there's a problem. I don't know whether they will manage. They're going to be able to manage on Saturday and Sunday. But on Wednesday, it will be a problem.
My name is Christine Karimi. I think the CBD is somewhere everybody access it. So I think accessibility will be a problem. The same hawkers that are going to sell, they need customers.
Some say the new system helped the country save millions of Kenya shillings lost in gridlock. It will also create room for informal traders to sell their merchandise. Paul Maringa is Kenya's principal secretary in the Ministry of Transport.
So every Wednesday and Saturday when we lock out the CBD from vehicles and public transport and only allow pedestrians or people in cycles, not motorcycles, bicycles, then we expect to be generating a business volume for the hawkers of 39.5 million shillings. We'll have a pilot that we're going to roll out in a few days, actually on Friday, 1st of February.
Last month, city authorities barred public service operators from accessing the Nairobi Central Business District in a move aimed at decongesting traffic. However, the move proved counterproductive, with city residents blaming the city chiefs of being insensitive to commuters. The county government later rescinded the decision. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
South Africa's coal mining heartland has the worst air quality in the world, according to recent study by environmental group Greenpeace. The 12 large coal mines in the area make it the world's hot spot for toxic nitrogen dioxide emissions. Residents and health experts say the effects are ruining their health and their lives. VOA's Anita Powell went to the coal heartland of Middelburg, South Africa for this report.
35-year-old Patrick Mdluli considered himself healthy until he moved 2 years ago to Mpumalanga province, South Africa's coal mining heartland. He developed breathing problems, including tuberculosis and nasal issues.
The mines, the dust, pollution. You go to doctors, they tell you the very same thing. Are you living next to a mine? Yes, I am. Are you living next to a dumping site? Yes, I am.
A large coal mine operates, literally, in Mdluli's backyard. The mine has conducted blasts every day, shaking his small home to its foundation and causing a large crack in the wall. This sunny swath of South Africa last year earned the unfortunate distinction of having the world's worst air quality, says the environmental group Greenpeace. And it shows, says the head of one of Middelburg's main clinics, Dr. Mohamed Tayob. Tayob has lived in the area his entire life and says the emissions from the mines have made many of his patients sick.
Children and adults are paying the ultimate price. When we say ultimate price, is the neurocognitive loss of neurocognitive development. Children's infant mortality rate is higher in our area than other areas. Adults' heart attacks and respiratory disease are much higher. So people are paying with their lives across the board because of these pollutants in the air.
Tayo blames the coal mining industry and poor governance. Although mines are big money, locals say the coal companies have done little to improve the community. Middelburg is poor and many people lack basic services like electricity and running water. Tayob says the government is also failing to enforce environmental laws and crack down on the mines.
One cannot be faulted in thinking, is there some level of corruption operating in this area as well, where these big boys are getting away with murder, literally. They're literally getting away with murder. It's just the reality. I mean, I'd like somebody to come up and dispute this fact and challenge me on that.
VOA contacted three of the larger mines in the area for comment. None of them responded to our request. Environmental activist Bafana Hwatshwayo says he and other activists are preparing to lobby decision makers at an upcoming mining industry gathering in Cape Town. They want the coal industry to shift to a cleaner resource, the region's abundant sunshine. Bringing solar panel production to the area, says Hwatshwayo, would also create jobs.
We're not saying we want to close down the mines. We must go the renewable energy way. So when we talk about the energy renewable way, we are saying people will manufacture solar panels inside South Africa, and they are the ones who are supposed to install the solar panels, and they are the ones who are supposed to maintain the solar panels.
But that is a faraway dream for people like Mdluli and his neighbors, who complain unemployment is high and all of them, including the children, have health problems. This province, says longtime resident and environmental activist William Giane, used to be beautiful.
It's an endless akoni now in Mpumalanga. It's not a bread and butter anymore. It's an endless akoni.
South Africa is the continent's largest coal producer and relies on coal to power much of the economy. But for the poor communities that live in the shadow of coal mines, it just makes them sick. Anita Powell, VOA News, Middelburg, South Africa.
According to one estimate, more than 70 million people in Nigeria use skin lightening products regularly, making Africa's most populous country the capital for skin bleaching. Some women reject the trend, saying their natural dark skin is beautiful. But as Timothy Obizu reports from Abuja, Nigeria remains a huge market for skin whitening products.
25-year-old Nigerian model and actress Goodness Ben visits a cosmetic shop in Abuja. She wants to be famous and says bleaching her skin could increase her chances at getting more movie roles.
Yes, this is Nigeria. A fair skin is business. That's what is business. In movie industry, most times the director wants you to like glow. In fact, you should be camera friendly. You know, most times dark people tend to, will I say resist? I don't know. But they are more beautiful and they are catchy when they come in contact with the camera.
According to a 2011 estimate from the World Health Organization, 76 million Nigerians, mostly women, use skin lightening products regularly. Some darker-skinned Nigerians are pushing back against the idea that lighter is better. They say black is beautiful with the so-called melanin movement. Tina Ohanu says she doesn't need to bleach her skin.
My confidence really doesn't come from my skin. It comes from within. And I still get as much attention from the male folk as every other lady should, so I don't think it has anything to do with my confidence.
Bleaching products usually contain hydroquinone, corticosteroids or mercury as key ingredients. These chemicals could have a range of side effects when used regularly, according to skin experts.
You can have stretch marks, the skin becomes fragile, doesn't heal properly. Sometimes you can have, some of them can give you abnormal skin odor. Excessive sweating, poor wound healing, so, and then it ages faster.
The beauty industry in Africa is worth several billion dollars and increases by 8 to 10% every year. Nigeria is one of the prime destinations for many beauty agents produced abroad. Ghana, Ivory Coast and Rwanda banned all whitening products while Nigeria joined South Africa in barring those with harmful chemicals. While these moves help promote natural and healthy skin tone, however, the melanin movement is still dwarfed by Africans' demand for skin lightening products. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, has the perception of women as leaders on the continent changed in the last decade? An in-depth discussion on African women and their future as leaders on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.